Welcome to episode 34 of Fresh Out of Tokens podcast. I am incredibly excited to have not just an amazing guest, but also an amazing co-host, because David is off doing things in Seattle, so sadly he could not be with us today for this episode. So I'm very happy to greet Holly Brockwell from Gadget. Say hi.
Hello. Hi.
And co-chairing with me, makes me very, very happy and excited, is our friend Turk Musa.
Hello.
So this may turn into like also mutual admiration episode. Because I have no shame. I fangirl a lot, and I fangirl over both of my co-mic. That sounds weird. Never mind. I cannot think of a good way to make that sound good without sounding also vaguely like over the top. So never mind. But as you know, we are part of the Geek.fm network, along with Geeks and Sneaks, Chromatic Life, and More Than Bits. We have teas, other items like coffee, mugs, and mouse pads, etc. in the I Need Diverse Games spreadshirt shop. And we split the profits 50-50 with our friend Chachi Bobinks, who designed our logos. And there's a blog to complement the show. If you want to follow us at outoftokenscast.com. For questions, compliments, or hate mail, please don't actually send us hate mail. I might cry. You can do so at freshoutoftokens@gmail.com. And with that out of the way, for those people listening at home, Holly, do you mind telling us a little bit about who you are and what it is that you do?
No, absolutely. Okay, so my name's Holly Brockwell, and I run a technology site for women. It's by and for women. It's called Gadget. You can see what we did there, kind of gadgets and women, gadget, you know. People can't seem to pronounce it, which kind of sucks, but from that, it's going really well so far. We're 7 months old, and we've got some really amazing people on staff, really amazing people writing for us, and we're growing and growing and growing. And one of the really interesting things as well has been that even though we're kind of by women and aimed at women, we have a lot of men reading us as well, which has been really nice. And people have said some really good things about, you know, they like our tone of voice, and they like the way we're quite inclusive and quite diverse, and trying to be kind of the good guys of tech media. It's going well so far.
Very cool.
And you may also know me from Twitter, where I basically live. where I am at Holly. Which, yeah, lots of people comment on that.
So how did you get just Holly?
Well, the girl that had it before me, her name wasn't actually Holly. Her name was Kelsey. So I had her murdered. And now it's mine.
No, it's like, but Highlander.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. But I get people asking me a lot if I can get them usernames, which I can't.
So what did you do before the website?
I used to work in advertising. So, I mean, right before Gadget, I used to run another women's tech site, which sadly doesn't really exist anymore. But before that, I worked in advertising for about 7 years, just in London, just kind of, I was a copywriter. So I think that's what Peggy in Mad Men does, if that helps. But basically, you come up with strap lines and slogans and ideas and kind of ideas for adverts and stuff. And I did lots and lots of writing as part of that. But I think I didn't get on that well with advertising because, I mean, again, it's a very male-orientated field, at least in the creative department. So I got quite used to that. But if you're a writer, I think it's quite a stressful profession because you're writing stuff constantly and you're coming up with ideas every day, and about a billion people get to feed in on those ideas and change them and mess with them and kind of justify their existence by adding a word to your headline that completely ruins the joke, or like, you know, it was just a lot of kind of stuff getting messed about with. Whereas I like journalism because I write something and it goes up the way I wrote it and the way I intended it, and that's quite refreshing for me.
Cool. Speaking of hiring, I know that Tarik and I have feelings about this topic. Tarik, do you want to ask Holly about this and maybe share some of those feelings?
What is your position in terms of, you've indicated that one of the comments you get frequently is the consistent sense of inclusivity and diversity when it comes to your site, which is obviously something that I noticed, one of the reasons that I started reading you guys. What is your, I don't know even how to phrase this, but obviously you're for it or you wouldn't be on this show, but if you were trying to explain it to somebody, I don't know, your sort of average person who doesn't understand the necessity of diverse hiring practices and sort of inclusion in general. What would you say from your position as somebody who runs a site, a tech site?
Well, I just think it's essential. I mean, it shouldn't even really be something that we have to think about so much and talk about so much. It should just be obvious. I think it's quite depressing how undiverse the rest of tech media is. I mean, they've at least woken up to it a little bit now in the sense that they understand that they have to get better, but I strongly feel that they are trying to get better, not because they actually believe in the benefits of diversity or because they actually, you know, are really bothered about it. I think a lot of the people that are trying to make differences now are doing it because they're having pressure put on them by wider society who knows that it's not okay. It's not okay to have a majority male staff, a majority white staff that all essentially come from the same background. They come from the same socioeconomic backgrounds. They have kind of similar opinions, you know, they have similar walks of life. And so they don't have perspectives, you know, that are different and more interesting. And I just think you're clipping your own wings as a publication if those are the only kinds of people that you're going to hire. You know, I don't want to hire 10 more people that are exactly like me who are going to say the same things that I say and use the same words that I say. How is that interesting? You know, I want to hear from people who've had a completely different life to me, you know, who've come from a totally different background and have interesting, different things to say. And I just think it's so depressing that kind of nobody really seems to care that much. You know, I've really struggled getting people to understand that they're going to make their product so much better by having other people, different people involved. And it's this very easy thing of, you know, I'm going to interview some guy that's a bit like me and I'm going to hire some guy that's a bit like me and then I'll have a team around me that's just like me and, you know, they like the same football team I like and we'll make the same kind of jokes. And I get that it's nicer in the office, but it doesn't result in a better product. And I think the writing really suffers for having a very homogeneous staff. I really do. And so on Gadget, we're really trying to get more diversity in. And it's difficult even for us because, I mean, we advertised a job recently. And I think probably for the first week or so that we had the job ad up, it was probably 70% guys applied for it, even though, you know, we're a female-focused site and we're a female-run site. And so I kind of thought, well, I'd written it in such a way, the job ad, that it was intentionally really inclusive. And I wrote a whole paragraph for people with imposter syndrome where I was like, you know, your brain is going to tell you that you're not good enough for this job. Just ignore it. Just apply anyway, please. And so I wrote it very, very much that way and hopefully trying to encourage people. But even then, you know, we got very overwhelmingly the same kind of people applying as apply everywhere else. And I think it's partly because those people are the ones who will have experience in tech media and they'll go, oh, I know I can do this job because I've done a similar job elsewhere. But so I kind of had to then tweet a lot and kind of message some people and say, like, can you help me push this out? And I said, come on, we're getting loads of guys applying, that's great, and thanks very much, I'm really flattered that you want to work with us, but I want to see more women, I want to see more people of colour, come on. And so I kept kind of basically hassling the world to apply for the job, and eventually we got there. But it was quite nice, actually, when I did the interviews for that job. I intentionally didn't look at anybody's social media pages. I didn't look at their faces, really, because I didn't want to be subconsciously influenced. And it's very easy to do that without meaning to. And so when I counted up at the end, when I decided the 10 people that I was going to interview based on names, which isn't ideal, I counted that we had 4 guys, 5 women and a transgender woman. And I was pretty happy about that, as balances go.
That's so awesome. So have you filled your position?
Yes, we have. We have Jen. Jen is fantastic. She started with us last week. Her job title is Science Officer. That's a Star Trek reference.
Nice.
She's doing loads of stuff in tech and science for us. And then we've already got Emma, who does gaming. So there's 3 of us now. We're growing.
Yay. but to kind of continue with the whole hiring part of it, as Tariq and I know, painfully, a lot of times when you're a person of color, especially on the internet, people think that your labor is free. So I had a moment about this online the other day. The response has been interesting, to be diplomatic. It's been ridiculous in some corners to not be so diplomatic. So I was wondering what thought you had, because, I mean, you're an influential woman. You know, you were Woman of the Year in 2015. You know, you are doing what a lot of people would love to do. You know, we kind of sort of joked about imposter syndrome before we started recording, but there's so many people out there that would never take that leap, but or they would go, okay, I know that I'm not doing the best thing I can do. I really want to do better. Let me go ask these people of color, but then there's no compensation coming. So I'd love to hear what both of you think about that, because I saw Turk's tweets about the piece, and like, I don't know if you got a chance to look at it, Holly, but...
I don't think I did see that.
Well, basically...
Fill me in, Turk.
Yeah, so Turk, fill her in, because I know I had my moment, and I was kind of there, I've said
well,
it.
I mean, you wrote it. Shouldn't you... Are you asking me to mansplain your own article to another woman?
No.
Is this what's happening right now?
No, I'm not asking that. But more kind of, you know, like, so as another person of color who read the article then, what was your take on it? Kind of like the whole phenomenon of people coming to us and going,
yeah,
I wanna do better, please help me, but not really realizing the labor that goes into that.
Yeah. It's very similar. I mean, you see it so often when it comes to marginalized voices who are sort of expected to use their, as you very well put it, use their life experiences and suffering and the hardships that they've encountered to then sort of transmute that into policy for people to hire in their businesses, which is just doesn't make any sense. And they want that kind of advice for free because they think that the attempt at moral practice is in and of itself sufficient compensation for us, as though the idea that, look, can't you see we're hiring people of color, why isn't that, so you should help us do that. Otherwise, if you don't help us, then we're not going to hire people of color, which is sort of the implicit response.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting because, of course, you see this often when I've said it as well about my own stuff, that I refuse to, you know, engage unless I'm paid for it, because that's literally my job is writing on these topics. And the animosity and that comes from refusing, from wanting payment for this is, it says everything about it, that our experience and knowledge isn't worth paying for, but it's definitely worth implementing. And that division is an issue.
Yeah, because not so ironically, just last night, someone pinged me on the Diverse Games Twitter and asked about their quote-unquote attempt at putting a funny black character into a game they were making. And I was like, oh, boy. One, you should go pay Sean Alexander Allen, because he has a business to deal with this. And two... when you put the words funny and black character together in the same sentence, I kind of make that face that a lot of my friends want to GIF.
Mm.
No, my friends have told me they're just going to start recording me and making GIFs out of my facial expressions. But, it, you know, the fact that someone, and this is after I wrote this piece, too, and I was like, how about you go pay someone? Cause, well, someone even, like, someone beat me to it. Because, you know, I do go outside. I do have a life. And I didn't see the tweets right away. And they were like, that's something you should pay someone for. And then when I did see it, I was like, yeah, you mean the guy that I keep talking about that has set up his own business to consult for you? Maybe you should talk to him and give him money.
Yes.
And I'm going to guess that no one is going to do that. Because, you know, again, the labor that we are expected to do is often expected. And for me, it ties back into conditional allyship of, look, I asked you a thing and I'm trying to do better. And why won't you help me?
Yep.
And I will definitely support you, but you need to be nicer and you need to make your tone appropriate to me so that, et cetera.
Yeah. And it's a very similar thing, I think. I mean, I wouldn't want to co-opt how awful and horrible that is, but it's kind of similar in being a woman and being a woman in the tech space, because I get a lot of people similarly emailing me saying, you know, I really want to hire more women in my tech company, and, you know, can you tell me how I do that? And I'm kind of like, well, I mean, it's great that you want to do that, but you want me to do all the work for you. Like, you don't want to have to make any effort here. You just want me to give you all the answers and then you can go away and implement them. And then you look like the good guy for having a female team. Well, I'm sorry, but it's more complicated than that. I believe it or not, I've got other things to do, you know. So I've got a policy now of I'm not working for free at all this year. I've already said no to about 8 people. And it's kind of funny, you know, they try and put the thumb screws on you. You know, they'll go like... oh, well, this person and this person and this person have done it for free. So, you know, I'm like, well, maybe they're millionaires or maybe they've got nothing to do with their week. But I'm kind of like working 24/7 at the moment. So, you know, if you're not giving me some money that I can put towards my business or time that I can put towards my business, then not really feeling that inclined to help you out, actually.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's, I would love to give, like, a talk on that or a TED Talk or something, but I found out that...
Well, it'd be ironic if it was a TED Talk, because they don't pay their speakers, do they?
Exactly. That's where I was going. I had no clue. I had no clue they did not pay you to speak.
I don't think so.
Nope. No. They... And TED Talks are not cheap.
Yeah.
Mm.
So I'm like, you want me to come and give you my knowledge.
Yeah.
And you basically want to pay me an exposure. A TED Talk. Okay.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not like I have a shortage of conventions to go talk about.
Well, I think the people that ask you to work for free, like, you always have to remember. So I think a lot of people, especially with the imposter syndrome thing, take it as a compliment and kind of go, oh, wow, you know, this amazing company wants me to speak for them, or somebody wants me to speak. That's amazing. I should definitely say yes. But the thing is, the reason they're asking you is because you have something that they want. Mm. You know, you have expertise that they want, or you have connections that they want, or you have profile that they want. And they are getting something out of that, and they shouldn't get it for free. You know, it's not actually a compliment to be asked to work
that's
for free.
That's a really good way of putting it. I wanted to ask Holly a specific thing.
Sure.
That's okay.
I'll go for it.
I remember, Holly, that you and I were dealing with a particular individual who responded to you tweeted about hiring when you were, you posted about the job. Yeah, do you remember this?
I do remember this.
And the response, we need to explain to Tanya what happened. I don't know, you obviously will remember better than me.
I don't know. I forget how it started. Was it just because I was tweeting about the fact that we hadn't had enough women, and I was gonna I was kind of appealing for more women, and somebody started saying that I obviously wasn't going to hire a guy for this job, and you know, I was hugely sexist, and it was just crazy. I mean, I get this so often. It's so ridiculous. I get accused of being sexist so often, and it doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, I'd specifically written in the job ad, men are very welcome to apply.
Yes.
Like, I wrote those words. I made sure that was in there, because I knew, you get used to it, don't you, when you've been on Twitter a lot. You get used to knowing, you know exactly what some dude's going to say.
My favorite was ready. Sorry, go ahead.
No, it's okay.
My favorite thing was that how many people, I think, responded to him by saying, maybe they don't want to hire people who don't read articles properly.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that is true. I mean, I did specifically say it, and then he started trying to backtrack and say, oh, no, yeah, I did read it, but I don't think you mean it. Like, why would I put it? I'm not going to waste my time. Like, I interviewed 4 guys for that job, and I do not have a lot of time. Like, I'm not going to give 4 hours of interview time. I hate interviews. Like, I really hate doing job interviews. I'm going to interview 4 guys just for fun. Like, clearly, and some of them were amazing, and they were very closely in the running, but Jen was just head and shoulders above everybody. But, you know, it's just amazing how often I, as the one person, as far as I can see, in tech media in the UK, who's really trying hard to make a difference and actually trying to change things, it's always me that gets the abuse about being sexist. And it's just so ridiculous. It's just so ridiculous. And I had this the other day as well, where Twitter had a right go at me because I said I started a tweet with dudes.
Oh, Jesus.
And it was so funny. And I was addressing all of Twitter with the word dudes. I was like, do any of you wise and wonderful dudes have any knowledge on this Google Apps function? And by that I meant people of Twitter, and it blew up, and people went crazy at me for saying dudes to mean men and women, and I do use it to mean men and women. Like, I call my mum dude, I call my sister dude, I call both my female employees dude. Like, dudes are just anyone to me. But you know, no, you're anti-feminist, and this is poisonous language, and it's toxic, and you're excluding women. And I can't believe the amount of times I, as somebody who is openly feminist, who has taken, I think it's fair to say, quite a lot of abuse for being feminist, and it's me that they're going to have a go at for being, you know, sexist and anti-women. I'm like, come on, pick your targets better.
Yeah.
I'm the wrong person to choose.
I don't know if you saw my angry tweets about someone trying to have a false equivalence with you.
Yeah.
I was like, really? This is where we're at today? This is how Twitter's going to start for me?
I'd even forgotten about that. I had that a couple of times. Yeah, somebody let me know that it was that me saying dudes to mean men and women is exactly the same as somebody using the N-word. I mean, just how they even got to that is beyond me. I mean, I got a giant email about it.
Oh my God.
Just a huge email that made no sense.
Wow.
That was a high point of my week this week, definitely.
Well, because I saw that and I tilted my head at my screen and went, that is like the masterclass of false equivalence right there.
Yep. And isn't it just such a lazy comparison? It's just where everybody seems to go to when there's any question about language and words and whether a word is okay or not okay. You know, that's the people go straight to the N-word, and it's such a bad example. It's like, no, this isn't even... Dudes, really? If you're going to say that's as bad, come on.
Well, when people don't, you know, have much basis, and they don't really have a good basis for anything, that is their baseline for argument.
Mm.
That's where they go. And I've had people try to tell me that I can't use African-American vernacular English.
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
What? Why?
Because they assumed that I was not black.
Oh.
You know, I'm fairly light skin complexion, but I am black. And I've had that kind of, but you can't say those things. And I'm like, really? But you can. Please tell me more. This is where the mansplaining comes in, Tarik, when people want to mansplain and, you know, racially explain to me why I can't use certain things.
Yeah, I was told I wasn't allowed to use person of color.
What?
Consistently by very angry white men.
Why?
For quite some time. Yeah. I've been lectured numerous times about the correct language of how to refer to people of different races by very angry white nerds for... God, ages.
Do people?
What's their issue with it?
I think they don't really have an issue with the term. They have an issue with me speaking, and so they will try and find any kind of bullshit argument that even sounds like an argument but isn't. So it's, for example, they'll say things like "people of color" is a bad term because you put. Because it should just be people, or it should just be, it's
come on.
Yeah, it's used
that
by.
That doesn't even make sense.
Only people that care about race are racists, and that kind of line of thinking.
So what? We should just pretend that races don't exist, then? I mean, like, what sort of argument is that?
It's the kind of people that can afford to live that kind of life, I suppose.
Take my advice and never go on Tumblr if the reaction you're giving right now is the one that you're having from people telling us not to use people of color. Because I had someone do that to me on Tumblr. They actually didn't do it anonymously, so I'll give them credit. But they tried to do the whole, you're excluding white people. And I was like...
Seriously?
Oh, they did. And, you know, this is one time where a Tumblr exchange turned out well. Because they apparently didn't know that I'm black. And I was like,
oh, God.
I was like, well, one, you do realize I'm a black American. And two, you don't get to tell me how to define myself. Mm-hmm. And this went back and forth. I'm like, okay, here's unpacking the invisible knapsack. Here's some other race 101 texts that you need to go read. And after you've read them, come and talk to me. And they actually did it.
Wow.
And they were like, you know what? I was wrong. I'm sorry.
Well, that's good. That's unusual.
I know. Like, I should go back and frame those emails. But before we get too far afield, I mean, we can talk about this all day, but there's other stuff. So you said before you were in advertising. So,
yeah.
So what got you to transition into doing the tech stuff?
Well, I think when I worked in advertising, I mean, I've always been a giant nerd. Like, that's just a thing. I've been a loser since my entire life, really. I get very overexcited about tech stuff. And I quite like that. And my dad was very much the same way and, you know, was kind of teaching me about robots and sci-fi and teaching me how to set fire to newspaper with glass prisms when I was very little. So I think I've always kind of had that. And when I worked in advertising, I mean, I wanted to go into journalism, but I was told at university that if you hadn't spent your whole uni career like working on the uni paper, and if you weren't like editor of your uni paper by the time you left university, then you weren't going to get into journalism, basically. And I was also told that you would have to work for free for at least a year, possibly more. And honestly, I couldn't be editor of the student newspaper at university because I had to have a job to pay for myself to get through uni, so that took up all my spare time. And similarly, out of university, I wouldn't have been able to do a year unpaid. And it is very, very unfair the way that people have to get into journalism now. And I don't know. I mean, this is partly why we have so little diversity, because we have people from very, you know, well-off middle-class backgrounds because their parents can pay for them to do a year of unpaid work experience. And it's really not helping. But I mean, for me, so because of that, I went into advertising instead, because it was a way that I could do writing and get paid for it. And at the time, it seemed sparkly and glamorous and and like I was going to love it. So I went into that and I did it for 7 years. But during that time, I worked on a lot of tech brands as well. So I did kind of, I worked on a couple of iPhone launches, and I worked on some phone networks and various different kind of gadget brands and stuff. Wrote a lot of stuff about phones, which was a really nice way to kind of exercise my nerdy side. And then when I was, I moved back to my hometown for a little while, and when I was there, I was working at a little marketing agency, and I saw a tweet from my friend Becca, who I've known forever, because she used to write for this tech site for women that I used to read, and she kind of said that they needed somebody to do phone reviews just a couple a week. And I was like, oh, you can get paid to review phones? Like, that's amazing. Like, that's a dream job. So I kind of sent her my pitch. I was like, you know, this is why I should be able to do it. And she brought me on board as their reviews editor. So I used to do 2 phone reviews every week on top of my main job, which was exhausting. I mean, it nearly did me in, because I was at work all day during the day. And then in the evenings, I was doing these phone reviews. And it takes a lot of time, because it's 1,000 words of writing, plus obviously all the research and kind of figuring out what you're going to say. And then I also used to take all the pictures, edit all the pictures, make the videos, edit the videos, put the videos up. And it just all took forever. So everything considered, you know, I used to probably finish filming at sort of 2:30 in the morning and then go to bed and go to work. So it nearly did me in, but after a couple of months, the guy that was running the site said that he really liked my stuff and wanted to make me editor of the site. So then I was able to leave my job and move back from my hometown back to London and took that on. And I did that for 9 months, but then sadly the site closed down. And that's how I ended up starting Gadget, because I still feel that there's a real need for a female-based space in the tech media.
Awesome. Well, we're very glad that you got that opportunity.
Me too.
Tell us about the Woman of the Year.
Wow, yeah, that was nuts. Towards the end of last year in November, I won Woman of the Year for starting Gadget, which was crazy. I mean, I didn't know anything about it. I got nominated for it by somebody who knows me and likes what I'm doing. And I didn't know anything about it until I made the shortlist. And I kind of got this email saying, oh, you're in the shortlist. And lots of people kind of going, oh, I saw you. And it was completely out of the blue, and I was against all these amazing women. I mean, it's run by a magazine called The Drum and a company called She Says. So they're both kind of creative industries companies, and they're kind of aiming to help get more women. She Says aims to get more women into advertising in the creative industries, which is awesome. And I really like what they're doing. So they have me up against all these incredible women, you know, who've done amazing things, led creative departments and worked for 40 years and won tons of awards and stuff. I thought, well, I haven't got a chance, but I was very, very flattered to be nominated. And so I went along on the night of the awards and I got quite drunk. And I was just kind of sitting there, you know, in my dress and my jacket with my glass of wine in my hand, like waiting to see who'd beaten me. And then they called my name. And I went, oh, right. I was kind of like, I wish I hadn't had a drink, because I'm not going to make any sense. And I had to kind of wobble my way up to the stage at the front, and I was kind of half drunk, half shaking. And I sort of went up there. I mean, there's a video, it's very funny, of me just kind of not knowing where I'm supposed to be going, who I'm supposed to be shaking hands with, just looking generally a bit of a mess. And these women are kind of looking at me like, really? This is our Woman of the Year? And then I kind of got off the stage and they went, oh, did you want to make a speech, by the way? I was kind of like, oh, right, okay. So I got in front of the microphone and said some words. I don't really know what I said. I think I basically just said, wow, quite a lot of times. And then I said something along the lines of, if any of you awesome women want to write for Gadget, then you should, because I don't have to do it anymore because I've won an award. I went and sat down. It was a good night.
That's awesome.
That was very cool.
So we've actually covered a lot about why you started up Gadget, and I'm going to start pronouncing it right because I keep wanting to say Gadget.
I get that a lot.
It's my American accent. I can't help it. but really, what's been the most gratifying part of doing this?
I think it's been amazing how people have reacted to it, I suppose. So I get love mail, really. I get people emailing me just taking time out of their day to say, do you know what, I really like what you're doing. Like, I think, you know, I think your site's great. I really like that it exists. I'm really enjoying reading these things, or I enjoyed reading this article. And that just kind of amazes me. I think it's so wonderful to hear from people that you don't know, that you've never had any contact with, just somebody out there in the world who really likes what you're doing. And it means such a lot to me. And I mean, there have been other gratifying bits. You know, we have a postcard that we use to promote the site, because I mean, I've had a lot of abuse and harassment for starting the site, because, you know, people don't like women doing things, and the old guard don't like women in tech media, full stop. So I took some of the mean comments that I got when we started the site, and I made them into a postcard, and we use that postcard now to promote the site, and everybody loves it. And so it's quite fun kind of giving those out and people going, wow, did people really say this? You know, women don't know anything about technology, and oh, I think it's a terrible name, and this stuff that people said. And now we have quite a fancy postcard out of it, which I think that's quite gratifying, just knowing that we've taken those comments and turned them around. And that all the people that told me right at the beginning before we did it that it was a bad idea and it was never going to work and it was too niche, and somebody memorably told me that nobody would want to advertise on it because who wants to advertise to women? Just what? You know, it's been quite fun showing all these people that said nasty things that they were completely wrong.
Yeah, that... Because, you know, the part of me that people don't get to see online, I'm actually kind of a sarcastic asshole. That makes me so happy when you can go, ha, we did it.
Yeah.
So, of course, we have to go to the flip side of this. And I was wondering, what has been the most frustrating part of starting up Gadget?
Oh, there's been lots of frustrations. I think, this is difficult. I mean, the fact that I've had so much abuse and harassment out of it has been quite frustrating. Lots of people kind of hate me now for various reasons, either because of something I've written or because I've made the site. And it's quite disappointing to see the level of rage because a woman is out there doing something on her own, you know, and actually trying to make a difference. And just, I guess the thing that disappoints me the most, because I get hundreds and hundreds of comments from dudes who, you know, by which I mean men, so perhaps I'm contradicting my own point there, but I get lots of messages from men saying, you know, you shouldn't be doing this, or women don't know anything about it, or, you know, I hate you, essentially. But what really disappoints me is when I get them from women. And it's only been very few, but somebody went to all the effort of writing an entire article about how much she hates my site and hates what I'm doing, which was quite sad. And somebody let me know that I shouldn't have made my own site, and instead I should have gone to work for one of the big male-orientated sites. And I just think that's really sad, you know, for a woman to turn around to another woman and say, I can see that you're being an entrepreneur, I can see that you've started something new, but I don't think you should have done that. I think you should have just gone to work for someone else and, you know, just made no difference in the world. Like, why would you say that to somebody? It's people, women tearing you down is really disappointing. And maybe it shouldn't disappoint me more than men, but it does. I think there's kind of an understanding that women who are supporting other women should kind of, you know, we should all kind of get that and help each other out. And it just makes me quite sad when women turn on you because you're trying to do something good.
Yeah, that, you know, that takes me back to the bad old days of high school.
Yeah.
At least for me. Other people may have had good high school experiences.
No.
No. Because I think when people do that, they're just like, oh, but high school was great. And I'm like,
No.
I don't know if you're lying or you just went to a really fancy, super rich, white, suburban high school.
Or maybe they've just forgotten. I think it's very easy to look back and just remember the good bits.
Yeah, see, I hold grudges, like, forever, so I remember all... I can't remember what I had for lunch, like, 2 days ago, but I remember what people did to me in high school.
Oh, hell yeah. You gotta save those up for the awards acceptance speeches. You know, you gotta wait and be like, yeah, and Dave, from year 13, remember when you said I had a big ass? Well, I do have a big ass, and I love my big ass, and I've won an award. So, I'm saving them all.
I'm enjoying this so much, I don't want this episode to ever end, and we're not even like halfway through. Okay, so the next couple questions go hand in hand because I'm that person. And I know people avoid this question or they don't ask it because they don't want to open a can of worms, but I'm going to do it because I'm that special kind of asshole. So you get interviewed a lot, you know, you do a lot of writing, and I'm sure people always go straight to the, so you're a woman in tech, what's that like? And I'm, please tell us, what is the question you despise getting so people will stop asking you?
It's that one. What is it like being a woman in tech? Because I'm not a woman in tech. And I've said this like 100 million times and people just don't listen. Like, yes, I run a technology site. It's a website about technology and we cover gaming and gadgets and geeky stuff. That's fine. But that doesn't mean that I am in the same situation as a female engineer at, I don't know, Facebook or Google or wherever, who's in a room of guys. You know, that's a completely different thing. And I would never want to co-opt that. I don't want to say that it's as bad for me as it is for those people, and I don't know what it's like. So it's kind of frustrating to me that people can't tell the difference between woman in tech and woman in tech media, and that's always the correction that I make. I'm not in tech, I'm in tech media. I mean, we're a media company, you know, we're a publication. There's not enough women in tech media either. So, I mean, there's still a massive diversity problem there, obviously, which is what we're trying to address. But it's not the same for me as it is for somebody at a company that makes a technology product or a software product and is surrounded by men all day. Like, that's a completely different thing to the job that I have. And so I guess it's kind of frustrating for me to keep hearing that question. It's like, you know, what is it like for you as a woman in tech, and how do you think we can fix tech companies? I'm kind of like, well, do you know that I don't work in a tech company? Like, I don't work at a smartphone manufacturer. I don't work at a software company. It's kind of different. So yeah, that's a little bit frustrating. I don't know. I get a lot of questions as well about how are we going to fix the situation, and it's the same thing we said before, you know, where somebody just wants me to do all the work for them. It's a massive question. There's no simple answer to here is how all tech companies ever can fix the gender balance in their companies. Like, it depends on who they are and how they're recruiting and what they want to achieve, and, you know, there's a million different things. So I can't, they want me to give some 2-line soundbite that fixes a massive societal problem, and I think that's quite an unfair ask, really.
Yeah, because I always just wonder about that, because, you know, we've had other people on the show, I've had Gita Jackson on, and, and I've talked to other people. And what bothers me a lot is, one, you're reduced to, oh, you're a woman in X field, or you're reduced even further to, you've survived all this abuse, what can we do about abuse? Like they've never accomplished anything else.
Yeah, that is true. I'm increasingly getting characterized as a victim of abuse this year. It's just like, oh, well, somebody said something about trolling, I should refer them to Holly. And like, I don't want to just hear about that forever. I don't actually want to dwell on it. And it's kind of sad now, because I've had so much of it in the last few months that whenever I see my friends now, they're kind of like, so yeah, you know, someone ejaculated on your photo and sent it to you. What was that like? I'm like,
what?
Do you think I want to talk about this now? Like,
wait, what?
You didn't know about that. Yeah, that was fairly recent, a couple of weeks ago. So I wrote an article about an app called Stolen that I was not a fan of.
Oh, yeah.
I got a lot of abuse as a result of that from people who were angry that the app got shut down. I didn't get it shut down, but I just did an interview with the CEO where he came across as having not thought through any of the problems with the app, which he hadn't. And so a few days later, they decided to shut it down. That wasn't my fault, but a lot of angry people got in touch with me anyway because their fun had been taken away from them or whatever. But one of those guys, went to the effort of bringing up my avatar on his monitor and ejaculating on it, taking a photo and sending it to me, which was lovely.
That's so fucking nasty.
It's horrible. It was really horrible. But equally, I mean, there's been articles about that, and so my friends have obviously seen it, and I've talked about it. But it doesn't mean that, you know, when I'm in a bar on a Friday night, that's what I want to talk about, you know. And I keep getting pigeonholed as this person who has been ejaculated on, which frankly is a bit reductive.
That's just nasty. Like, your friends should be the ones who are going, you know, let's leave the internet out there.
Yeah, there's a million things I want to talk to them about. I mean, it's got to the point where at the moment there's been so much stuff that's happened to me lately that I don't really want to talk about myself at all with my friends. I want to talk about them. Just tell me about your life. It sounds less stressful than mine.
We all have feelings about the bad ways in which nerds behave. Yes. So I was wondering, Trick, if you had thoughts on why nerds are often badly behaved or are just simply bad.
Nerds.
And there you go, people. That's the answer. Well,
that's basically sort of encapsulates. I mean, did you get the hint of disdain as well? That was
yes, it was very clear.
Nothing in particular that I haven't said 3,000 times before, but it's not unknown what my position is when it comes to the aggressive sort of self-identification with a consumer identity is highly problematic. But I wanted to delve further with, would you be okay talking about the BBC article?
Hey, me? Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Okay, because I don't think people get, and I'm actually more interested in the sort of overarching aspect when it came to your interview and what happened with Stolen. That's actually kind of that interests me just from like a purely a media perspective. So I was wondering, you sort of briefly spoke about it now, but I was wondering if you could explain it for somebody else.
Yeah, I mean,
like even what the app is.
Okay, so there was basically what happened is one of my friends sent me a screenshot just out of nowhere, and it said, well, I say friend, a contact, and it said, Holly Brockwell belongs to you now, and it had this kind of banner across my face, and I'd never seen it before, and I couldn't figure out what it was or what it had come from, and it was clearly my Twitter account in the background, and I sort of said, okay, what the hell is this, and he explained, oh, you know, it's this app called Stolen where I can buy and sell people's Twitter profiles and then I own them and then I can kind of trade them and sell them and write stuff on them. And I'd never heard of this and I thought it was really weird. I kind of especially thought it was weird that I hadn't agreed to be traded. And yet my name, my face, my whole Twitter account, like all my tweets, my background picture, everything was all on there. And so I looked into it and it was this. I mean, it's not an app that allows you to access that person's Twitter account in any way, I should be clear on, because I've been accused of having said that, which I definitely didn't say. But it doesn't obviously allow somebody into your Twitter account, but it turns your account into like a trading card. And so people can buy and sell that trading card. And it looks exactly like your profile. It has your face on it and your name on it and everything. And once you've bought somebody, you can write whatever you want on their profile, you know, you can give them a nickname and stuff, and there was no kind of swearing filter on that or anything. There was nothing to stop you buying somebody you hate and writing horrendous things on their profile, which is kind of horrible. So I was quite annoyed about this app, because while I have given permission to Twitter to give my account details to third parties through the API, this wasn't the kind of usage I had in mind. And I wasn't very happy about the idea of a company making profit off my name and image, you know, without really speaking to me about it. And I at least thought, you know, if all of that is permissible through the API, which I think it is, I should at least have the option to opt out, you know, to be able to revoke access, which I couldn't do. So there was no way to opt out of Stolen, and I thought that was quite a bad thing. So I called up their CEO and I had an interview chat with him. So I asked him, I put all these questions to him about kind of harassment and stuff. I was like, do you not see the problem with, you know, Gamergate people buying games journalists and writing things on their profile? Do you not see the problem with kind of men buying women and people buying minorities? And like, obviously there's a whole horrible history of stuff there that's just going to be invoked by this horrible app that allows people to buy other people. And I said, couldn't it be more like a stock market kind of thing where you're like investing in somebody, you have stocks in somebody? I was like, that's more of a compliment than, you know, I'm saying I'm investing in you, I believe in you kind of thing, rather than I own you, which is a very negative thing. So I interviewed him and asked him all these questions, and he just kind of, he fell apart really in the interview. He didn't really have any answers to any of this stuff. And I kind of said, well, you know, how are you going to stop people buying women just to harass them? And he said, well, you know, you would have to grind for a month to have enough currency to be able to buy someone. And then 2 minutes later, he said, oh, yeah, in-app purchases, you can buy the currency with real money, which means that he was accepting real money for people to be able to harass somebody. And he obviously hadn't thought of it that way. And so I said that to him. I was like, so you're going to take money to let somebody harass Zoe Quinn? And he was kind of like, oh, yeah, well, that's not very good, is it? And I was like, well, no, it's not very good. It's quite bad, really. And so he started saying, you know, oh, we'll give it to charity or whatever. But he clearly hadn't thought through. And so I published the interview and I said, you know, this is how I feel about it. And I was very clear about the pros and cons of it and the fact that there should be an opt-out. And they started working on an opt-out, but then they really messed it up because the opt-out required you to give Twitter authorization to the app. So this app that you'd never agreed to in the first place, that you'd never had any dealings with whatsoever, if you wanted to get rid of them, you had to then give them access to your account, which included posting tweets. And I kind of said to them, you know, do you not see? How do you not see that you're making this worse? Like, do you think about this stuff at all? Clearly not. So that didn't really help. And then eventually they did let people opt out by DM, but by then it was way too late. And kind of the article that I'd written, the interview, went quite viral. And so a lot of people read it, and a ton of people that read it were angry about it and tweeted Stolen saying they wanted to opt out. And so they just disappeared under a mountain of opt-outs and decided to shut down the service, which isn't, you know, I didn't get it shut down.
They opted out of being a service.
Yeah, they did. They did. It was nice that they had the option. But,
wow.
You know, that's what they did. They decided to pull it. And I didn't make them pull it. And I never at any point anywhere suggested that they should pull it. I suggested some improvements, but I never said they should get rid of it. And so obviously I got hammered with censorship, feminazis, you're ruining our fun. And like, I've heard it all before. You know, I mean, I kind of...
Is that your Gamergate voice?
That's my that's my generic angry Twitter eggs voice.
Oh my god.
This is how I imagine them all.
That's amazing.
And so I got all the usual ones that are really unoriginal. Like, I don't really like the unoriginal ones because they don't bother me at all, you know. I get these ones that are like, why don't you kill yourself? And I'm like, well, that didn't take you very long to come up with, did it? It's the really creative ones that kind of stick in your head. Like, some people, honestly, I don't know where they go to in their heads, but they get some quite creative insults. So that was nice. I mean, I got lots of those. And somebody then made an account, a Twitter account, for a new app called Slavery. And it had the same avatar as Stolen. And it was like, oh, you should download our app Slavery, where you get to download whores like Holly and do this. And then had the picture of them, of the guy having come on my face.
They need more than Jesus. I'm sorry.
What's weird is that you would figure if there was like a single person who had heard of a thing and this major issue, it's kind of a big issue called Slavery, would probably not look very good if there's some white dude who says, I now own you, to a black guy.
Exactly. But they hadn't thought about that. They hadn't even considered it.
Which ties into a general thing which you would know very well about, which comes to when it comes to tech companies in general, for everything from Twitter to media itself, in terms of who comprises those entities. So if there was somebody... If there was somebody with any kind of social knowledge or experience in that team, in that app people tech bro thing that made this awful piece of shit, that it would never have happened, because they would have gone, by the way, slavery's kind of bad and this is what it looks like. I mean, that's all it took. As he fell apart in your interview.
Yeah.
Obviously nobody
because
had
they
said.
Hadn't thought about it. Nobody had raised the issue. Yeah, I think
because there was no one to raise the issue.
No, it sounded exactly like, you know, it was just the usual kind of group of very privileged Silicon Valley people who hadn't really experienced. They obviously hadn't experienced harassment or trolling, because anybody who had instantly would say the same thing that I said. When you've been harassed like that, you can see straight away the problems with anything like that. You can instantly see how people are going to use it to target you. And he just clearly hadn't thought that at all.
And I imagine one of the things, I didn't know you at the time, but it reminded me a lot of that awful, horrific piece of shit that was People.
Yes, I remember that well.
So that same kind of mentality of the idea of opting out, or even, it should be opt-in, firstly.
Yeah.
But not having any kind of, giving people any kind of options in terms of how they control their own online personas.
Yeah.
It's just the most ridiculous thing, and it seems to be a theme. Did you think of People?
Yes, absolutely. There's a clear comparison there, because it's very much the same kind of thing where you're gonna be allowed to be rated, so somebody could go on there and rate you. You know, someone you'd been on one date with once in 2010 could write that you were the worst person in the world because you didn't want to give them a quick handy in the car on the way home. I mean,
that's an issue.
just a horrible idea. And again, I think it's yeah. this thing of people who just haven't been through it, don't know what it's like for people who have. And the amount of, I mean, you must get it as well. I think probably all of us get it, where when we're going through something and we're being harassed and we're being abused, all of these people jump in with their unsolicited advice. Like, I don't think I've ever once asked for advice for how to deal with this stuff, but people will tell you. You know, they want to give you their advice, so they'll be like, well, don't let them grind you down. You know, just don't let them get
just,
you.
Just turn off Twitter.
Oh,
just
yes. Oh, yes. Switch off Twitter. Just you should leave them. Twitter. Stop using the internet. Close your laptop. I mean, never mind that we need it for our jobs. Never mind that the people doing the abuse don't have to do this. No one's telling them to get off the internet. They can use it as they like.
Yeah, it's not like your job involves the internet.
Oh, I know. You know, it's not. It's not like it's vital. And also, even if it didn't, even if I worked on a farm, why should I have to leave Twitter because some guy can't control his rage? You know, like, it shouldn't be me. I've continually said this. It shouldn't be me that has to change my behavior. It should be them. They're in the wrong. You know, so. It frustrates me, and so I get constantly people telling me not to let it grind me down, and I get people telling me every time someone will tell me not to talk about it. It's like, we're just making it worse, Holly. You're making it worse by talking about it. So, you know, you should stop talking about it. Like, well, how are people ever going to understand the volume of stuff and the nastiness of stuff that we get if we don't talk about it? How are we going to solve a problem that we're scared to talk about? It makes no sense to me to say that. And no, I won't be silenced. Like, why should I? You know, somebody sends me something horrendous, I'm going to talk about it. I'm going to say, look what women still get for talking about technology or for interviewing an app creator. You know, this is, I had done nothing to deserve that. I mean, I've had it this week. I can't even, it's almost like you look for something, you look for a reason why they've done it. So I knew all the stolen people, I knew why they were hassling me. Then I've had a load of stuff this week. I don't know what I did to, you know, I hesitate to say to deserve it, but I don't know what set them off. A couple of weeks ago when I was out at a tech trade show in Las Vegas, I just got a tweet out of nowhere saying, let's hope 2016 is the year that Holly follows in her father's footsteps. And my dad killed himself.
Shit.
Yeah, and it had a bit.ly link in the tweet with an image behind it. And I think it's quite telling that they used an image behind a link rather than putting it in the tweet itself where they wouldn't know if I'd seen it. And it was an image of a car that had been used in a suicide the exact same way that my dad killed himself. And, you know, that kind of thing, what could I possibly have done to deserve that? You know, just, I mean, if you don't talk about this stuff, people think you're talking about somebody tweeting you and saying, oh, I didn't really like this article you wrote. You know, no, I'm talking about people saying they wish I'd kill myself like my dad did. Like, that's the kind of level that we're dealing with. I think people need to see it to believe it, honestly.
Shit.
But then they will shoot you down for talking about it.
I wanted to ask you, because this is incredibly related to a conversation I was having with myself on Twitter, because I don't talk to anybody. I just kind of assert dogmatically on my Twitter account. I'm terrible at conversation, but I was discussing the, I forget who it was recently, but another place was closing its comment section.
Mm.
And Guardian just did it now. There's a Guardian piece on Guardian Media about how they're severely limiting the comment spaces in, I think, on articles about refugees.
Ah.
And it was interesting because I need to remember what the original catalyst was, but there was somebody who was talking about closing a comment section, and the first thing, of course, that they went to was, you are refusing to hear criticism. And what is interesting to me is what you just said, what we have to deal with isn't, I think your article was bad, or this is my counter-argument to your position. It's threats, it's abuse, it's
exactly.
The most, it's horrible, awful crap. But it's interesting because when we talk about comment sections, the first thing that all of us here think of is that awful bile.
Mm-hmm.
But for the kinds of people that immediately talk about free speech and other horseshit, their thing is this, like, garden sort of where Plato and Aristotle can exist and there's calm debate and rationality and civility that exists below. Like, I don't know what comment section they're reading.
Yeah.
But obviously they're sort of probably not writers, but it's interesting that that our associations are so different, which just speaks to the level of privilege, I suppose.
Well, yeah, again, this is why it's so important that we talk about exactly what it is that we do get, because otherwise people don't understand. They don't understand, like, they didn't get why I closed the comment section on Gadget, because we had it when we launched, and I said at the time when we launched, we will have to close this. I was like, I know we're not going to be able to keep this, but I'm going to put it up there because if we don't, somebody will say, oh, you're just assuming that you were going to get bad comments. You know, you don't know that.
Yeah.
So I put it on there, and we wrote an article.
You've been on the internet.
And we wrote, one of my writers wrote an excellent article about a Reddit project where men were photoshopping what they thought were unattractively overweight women to be what they thought were hot, skinny women. And so obviously we wrote about how this is a way to control women's bodies and that kind of thing. And the comments were just appalling. I mean, they were disgusting and threatening and abusive. And they'd gone into her previous articles. They'd gone all through her Twitter and like were posting personal stuff about her as a writer. And I wasn't going to deal with that. And it was exactly what I was waiting for. And so I closed the comment section on the whole site. And I said, we're not having comments. I'm sorry. Some people don't get to spout their opinion here. Like, I don't owe you a platform.
Yeah.
If you can't play nicely, I'm sorry. Like, for the one guy somewhere, I mean, people complain bitterly about this. You know, well, I would have left good comments. Well, you didn't. I mean, we got next to no useful comments. Mostly people are only really motivated. This is the problem with the internet in general, is that people are only really motivated to leave a comment or send an email when they're very, very angry, when something's really bothered them deeply. So you don't get... This is why I get hundreds of angry emails, you know, for every nice one.
The only reason I write articles is because I'm furious all the time. So.
Well, yeah, it works both ways. But it wasn't until... I mean, I wrote something quite recently about the fact that I don't want kids. And I got a ton of abuse out of that for some reason. And it wasn't until other sites wrote about the abuse that I was getting for it that then I got loads and loads of really positive comments. And loads of people sent me really nice stuff. You know, I was like, I totally agree with you. I thought your article was spot on. I think it's terrible what you've had to go through. But they weren't motivated enough to send them initially. And so it often feels like everybody hates you. Everybody's angry at you because the only people that will make that effort to send it most of the time are people who are angry.
Yeah, it's interesting. I actually was in New York earlier in the month to talk about harassment at the Microsoft Social Computing Symposium. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting because Anita Sarkeesian was there, a couple colleagues that are doing more research in the academic side, and then another person, Farah, who is looking at domestic abuse and kind of the harassment that comes in there where someone tries to leave and the breakdown of support systems.
Hmm.
And when you were talking, Holly, I was thinking about Anita's part of the presentation, because I know the abuse that she goes through, like we see it, it's not a surprise. But to be like a few feet from her and see her body language and then see the appalling shit that people send her and like the punch Anita Sarkeesian game. And like, I was just like, you know, at that level, how do you keep going, I guess? Because I've got my fair share of abuse, you know, it's and all I want to do is say, hey, let's have more women and brown people in games.
Yeah.
You know,
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the things that tip these people off, unbelievable. It's people like us trying to make a difference and actually trying to improve things that get so much of the abuse, as opposed to the people who aren't doing anything about it and just quite happily sitting on their all-white, all-male boards and doing nothing, and they get none of this. It's very unfair.
Yeah, and it was very interesting because I watched the crowd as I did my kind of mini-talk before we broke into groups. And seeing the look on their face when I said how many Twitter accounts I have to block just to use Twitter.
Yeah.
You could see light bulbs going off over some heads. Yeah. And you're like, so it took a real live person standing in front of you for you to finally get it, for it to finally click.
Yeah.
And that's the...
Absolutely.
Yeah, and that's the part that's disheartening, at least for me, because, you know, I often get a lot of, well, I get the same thing. Oh, get off the internet. Or if you, you know, I get tone policed. Like, so last night I get in and I had a tweet, you know, sometimes how Twitter doesn't show you the tweet a person's replying to. And so I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? It's midnight. I'm trying to go to sleep. And it was about the girls who had gone out of sequence from the class photo to spell out the N-word.
Oh, yes.
God. Yeah, and they decided that, you know, this was a witch hunt against innocent girls. And I'm like,
what?
Oh. Yes. And they were like, but do their lives deserve to be destroyed? And people often tear down teenage girls. And they tried to basically do amazing mental gymnastics because I guess like their college admissions are being rescinded from some places.
Yeah.
And it's like, you took an action. They are grinning in that photo.
Mm-hmm.
So even if it was peer pressure, there were enough of them to spell out this word. How many people did it take to convince you? Why are you surprised that there's a backlash? And where do you live that no one, A, didn't stop you when they saw what the fuck you were about to do?
Mm.
Or once you tweeted that picture, or whoever took it, thought this was okay. So there's a breakdown of, this is a thing we do, this is a thing we don't do, and oh my god, I did a terrible, shitty, racist thing, and now I have to pay for it, to you're tearing down these innocent young girls.
What?
Yes, yes.
I mean, you have to wonder, at what point, when you're sitting down sewing your t-shirt that says your portion of the N-word on it, how does this not occur to you that maybe this isn't what you should be doing?
Well, it was from a class photo. They put themselves together to spell it out from a greater image. There was something about their class photo. Now, why there are asterisks in this class photo, I don't know.
That's what I was going to say. Why would they have asterisks? It makes no sense.
But, you know, the internet rightfully reviled them. And it's like, you were talking to a black woman who had to see this shit, who has to deal with this shit. Because, you know, like, I'm older. I'm in my 40s. I've seen a lot of shit that a lot of people don't want to... They want to pretend that that's in the past. That doesn't happen anymore. They keep wanting to go, oh, that's just older people. No, there's younger people clearly still doing this racist shit.
Yeah.
And it just makes me wonder where people think, one, this was an okay thing to come to me about a two-week-old tweet at this point, because that's forever in the internet terms. And why would you try to have these mental gymnastics to convince me that I'm somehow going after these innocent girls? You know, I retweeted from a few people. I wasn't out there with my torch and pitchfork, but I also used to work in higher ed. That's the kind of thing that would have gotten your admission rescinded at any school.
Well, too right.
So it's like when you have these moments, I'm just like, how do we get to this point of, just because you see something, you feel the need to have this conversation? And then the coup de grace for me was, well, that one remark, that one reply, I was going for a light and playful tone when I said, oh, what offensive picture of myself can I tweet for you to take out of context? How did we make a left turn to this? And you think light and playful was still in this conversation?
No. People say that a lot, you know, where they send something gross and you say, that's gross. And they're like, oh, but I was only kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, I meant it lightly. I meant it nicely. I was just joking. Like, well, A, in 140 characters of text, that does not come across as you know. And B, there is no tone in the world that made what you just said okay.
Yeah, I'm surprised no one jumped on that, because I was just like, you know what? It's midnight in my part of the world. My neighbors are having a really loud fucking party and I'm done talking to you. I want to go to sleep.
Yeah, I reply to a lot fewer people now than I used to. I think it took me a while to realize that I don't have to reply. I don't have to engage with these people. They send me a stupid question, I don't have to reply to that. I used to, because they were always so wrong that I really, really wanted to come back to it and just go, look how wrong you are. But you never get anywhere, you never win, they don't change their minds, they just keep going, and it gets more and more personal. And the more you annoy them, the more they start doing stuff outside of Twitter, where, you know, they'll start tackling you another way. So, for example, yesterday, this is kind of why I feel like I can't say anything on Twitter anymore ever since all the stuff that I've been trolled for, because there's a load of people on my case now who just monitor my tweets and wait for an opportunity to do something to me. So yesterday I happened to mention that Gmail disregards full stops in email addresses. So you can have, you know, john.smith and you can have johnsmith at, and it's the same email address to Gmail.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go to Instagram and you sign up with johnsmith at and you sign up with john.smith at, it considers those different emails because most ISPs do. And so somebody was able to sign up for Instagram with my email address by putting a dot in it. And that was a complete accident. That person did that not intentionally, not trying to annoy me, but just thought that that was their email address. And so I tweeted about it and I said, you know, this is a bit of a flaw. They should maybe fix it. And so some sad human being wasted their Saturday evening going back through my tweets to find the one time about 4 years ago that I mentioned my Gmail address on Twitter, managed to find it, and then signed it up for a whole load of stuff and started making Twitter accounts with it, using that flaw, trying to get into my PayPal with it. You know, goodness knows what they put on the Twitter account that they signed up with my email, because it was in my name, but I couldn't see it because by the time I got to it, like you said, I was actually out having a life, you know. I wasn't sitting there monitoring Twitter amazingly. By the time I got to it, it had already been suspended. And God knows Twitter are pretty slow on suspensions, so goodness knows what they said. to have got it suspended that quickly. But it's just, you know, you start feeling like you can't say anything anymore, because every time, and it was such an inoffensive thing that I said there, and it resulted in all of that. It's so ridiculous.
Yeah.
It frustrates me. You just feel like they're watching you all the time.
Well, they are.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
Entire subreddit dedicated sometimes.
Yeah, and then you get people saying, oh, by the way, you know, parody accounts and stuff are a great way to get verified on Twitter. Let me tell you, for anybody listening who thinks that is true, that is not true. I have had more parody accounts than I can count, and Twitter don't want to help me out with that whatsoever. I mean, they're kind of looking at it now after I've complained several times. But overall, I mean, I've had so many parody accounts. I'm not even famous. I can't imagine what it's like for famous people. But, you know, there was a brilliant moment last year where I'd had a really bad day. I'd been on this horrendous date with this guy who very kindly let me know that he was also sleeping with two other people and not using protection with either of them. So that was already a fantastic day. And I'd gone to a bar to kind of try and drown my sorrows and kind of see my friends. And in the queue for the bar, I looked at my Twitter and somebody had made a Twitter account for my teeth. And we're using it to tweet all my friends. And it's just kind of moments like that where you go, what is this? what is my life? based on one photo, they'd looked at one photo. They've obviously never met me in real life. And they'd looked at one photo where it looked like, if you looked at it a particular way, it looked like I only had one middle tooth. And it was just taken from an angle. Like, I have two middle teeth. Look at any other picture. But they'd made a Twitter account for what they thought was my one middle tooth. And then just tweeted all this horrible stuff at all my friends with it. And it's just stuff like that, you know.
Who has this kind of time?
I know. Like, find something else to do.
Can't they play video games or something? Well,
Turek, you banned all the video games, so there's nothing left for us.
And no one can play Stolen anymore because of me. So,
right.
So we've just ruined the world's fun.
But let's shift, as we kind of get toward the end of this, to something a bit more fun. You know, what's your favorite piece of technology you've kind of got to play around with for Gadget?
Oh, definitely virtual reality.
Yeah?
So I was so excited about virtual reality. I mean, I honestly think it's moving towards the utopia that we've all been striving for as humanity. I mean, I may be slightly too evangelical about this, but I think virtual reality has such amazing potential because it's a whole new world where your physical body doesn't matter anymore. So, you know, you can put that headset on and you can go into a world where you're like a dinosaur or you're a whale or you're a different person entirely. And I think that's amazing. You know, it doesn't matter if your physical body is in a wheelchair. It doesn't matter if you are terrible at gymnastics. You know, you can go in there and you can do gymnastics. You can do windsurfing. You can climb up things. You can fly. You can do all the things that your body doesn't allow you to do. I think that's amazing. And I think you can be whoever you want to be. You know, for people that have gender dysphoria and body dysphoria and things like that, where they don't feel like their body represents who they are, they can go into that world and be whoever the hell they want. And their physical presence doesn't matter. And I think that's really amazing, and I think it's going to be wonderful. You know, if we can make it work where we can all live in a world where it doesn't matter what you were born as, I think that's something that will really benefit society, hopefully. And also, I think it kind of gives us the potential to get rid of the emphasis on physicality. So, I mean, geography, for example, is a big problem for the modern world because, you know, you have, like I was saying earlier, the housing crisis in London. So I'm looking for flats at the moment. I basically can't afford to live anywhere at the age of 30 with a decent job. And so in virtual reality, it doesn't matter because you can go into that and you can meet people from anywhere. And, you know, it doesn't matter if you're based in different cities, different countries. And I think hopefully if we all kind of end up working, like if we could have jobs in virtual reality and stuff, then it doesn't matter where you live. And that will be much more egalitarian, I think. Or I'm hoping so anyway. And also it's much better for the planet in the sense that at the moment, the stuff that you buy and the stuff that you want to have in your house and you want to have surrounding you all has to be made out of physical stuff. And, you know, that stuff gets wasted and it gets buried in landfill and stuff, and it has to be produced out of something. But in virtual reality, you can make something out of nothing. You don't need that. You don't need to go and cut down forests. And so I think it has a lot of potential to be something that could really change the way humanity works. But also, equally, you know, it has potential to be the worst of society in the same way as anything does. I often say about Reddit that it's the best and worst of humanity because you see some amazing things on there and you see some awful things on there. And I think it's going to be much the same way where, you know, it could on the one hand be incredible or it could be, on the other hand, you know, somebody's going to go into virtual reality and make an avatar that looks exactly like you and then practice cutting it up. You know, that's going to happen. People will do that. People will do messed up stuff. And I'm very glad that I'm not the person that has to regulate this. That sounds like a nightmare. But yeah, I mean, VR is amazing. VR is very exciting. And I get to try it again soon. I'm going to Mobile World Congress in Barcelona next month. And so I get to try the HTC Vive, which is the one that they made with Valve. Cool. Again, and that is super cool. And they've added this new thing to it where when you have the headset on, you can switch on this new mode and you can see the outlines of all the stuff around you. And it's crazy. It's super cool. Like, you know, you can see, like, in electric blue, you can see, like, there are people near you and, you know, there's, like, chairs near you and stuff, and you can see all of that, and it helps you obviously not bash into things and not accidentally, like, crash into the cat when you're trying to play a game. But also, it just looks awesome. I'm way excited about that. And all the games, obviously, the Portal game and all the kind of job simulator stuff is really cool. The only problem I have with it is that the kind of virtual reality that's really immersive requires you to move around. And as per previously mentioned housing crisis, no one in London has enough room in their houses to move around. So I don't really know how that's going to work.
If you could, so far, in terms of what you've achieved, is there anything that you would alter at all or do differently?
Just in terms of my career or in my life?
Either, or both.
Both.
Ah, that's an interesting one. What would I do differently? So it's very difficult with kind of the way that time works, I guess, to look at things that you've done and want to regret them or undo them, because you don't know if you undid that, what else you would affect. And so I could say I regret spending 7 years in advertising because a lot of the time it was miserable. And I was essentially, you know, trying to fit myself into a box that I didn't fit into and I didn't really enjoy it. But at the same time, if I hadn't done that for the length of time that I did, and if I didn't meet the people that I met doing that, you know, would I have ended up doing Gadget? I don't know. Like, probably not. I think all of those circumstances have to come together in a very specific way. So I think there's multiple ways that your timeline could work out. And so it's difficult for me to say, I want to undo this thing, because who knows what else that would get rid of. I don't regret any of the stuff that I've written, even all the stuff that's got me the abuse. I think I wrote all of it for an important reason. You know, the fact that the reason that guy on Twitter knew about the way my dad committed suicide is because a couple of years ago, I wrote a piece about an advert that was making light of suicide and kind of taking the piss, really, as we say in England, out of people who kill themselves in cars. And I wrote a very emotional, very personal piece about the fact that was the way my dad died, and that it was very important to me that they don't take that lightly, and they don't, like, attack people with their memories, essentially. And so I got a ton of abuse out of that. I mean, the trolling I got from that was probably worse than anything I've ever had since, because, you know, it's people kind of repeating your worst fears back to you, where they say, like, oh, your dad killed himself because he didn't love you, or because he was ashamed of you, and things like that. I mean, yeah, the people say all the worst things, and it's all stuff that's occurred to you before, and so hearing other people say that back is quite traumatic. But I mean, people have said to me, don't you regret writing it? I don't regret writing it, because the fact is that advert got pulled. I didn't ask for it to be pulled, but it was pulled. And so nobody else had to see that. And, you know, a lot of people hopefully learn that that's not something that it's okay to take the piss out of. And it's not something that you should use in your advertising for the sake of winning awards. You know, you don't get to traumatize people for your creative award. And so I think that achieved something. So I don't regret doing that either. The one thing maybe I do regret is earlier this year I wrote something for the BBC about not having kids. And I originally wrote a much stronger, much more personal version of that article. And I pulled it because I was worried about the trolling that I would get. And so I wrote a much weaker version, which ironically then got tons of trolling anyway. So you can't win. You can't win. I was like, I thought it was completely uncontroversial, but what do I know? So I do slightly regret that they let me change my story, but ultimately I had to do that for my own self-protection.
Well, I'm glad you wrote it, and I'm glad that you and other women are in the space, because I freely admit some days I want to be like, you know what, fuck it, I'm done, I quit.
Oh yeah,
this is not worth it. You know, because I've gotten a lot of, well, you know, people see you in this certain way, and now you owe it to be present. And I'm kind of like, well, I actually don't. You know, I enjoy doing what I do. I love the work that I'm doing. However, when you get into you owe X because of Y, that actually makes me want to pull back even more.
Yeah, I agree. And I get the same thing where people will tell me, well, you're an example for young women and you're an example for people that want to go in the industry. Therefore, you have to outwardly show that none of this stuff bothers you. You have to outwardly show that you're completely fine and completely strong. And I don't think that's useful. I think that's useful because I don't want to bring anybody into the industry who might get the same kind of abuse that I've had and think that it wasn't, that it shouldn't affect them. It does affect you. Of course it does. You know, I'm a human being. Mm-hmm. People say terrible things to me. That's going to upset me. And I wouldn't want to present a front that says, oh no, this is all fine. You know, if you're upset by this stuff, then you're weak. I don't think that's helpful.
It's not. A lot of times, like either on Facebook or in kind of Twitter patients at 4 a.m. when I can't sleep, I'll often talk about how things are bothering me, how things are upsetting me. And sometimes it's just really hard to deal with. Like, I participated in the Shout Your Abortion tag.
Mm, yes.
And I wrote a Medium piece on that. I kind of basically just collated the tweets together. And I got worse abuse for that. This was something that, you know, I've been deeply ashamed of for over 20 years. And I finally spoke on it because I saw, you know, I was motivated slash, you know, I guess moved to finally discuss this. And, you know, it's hard when you put yourself out there emotionally. And I just kind of had this moment of, I made myself vulnerable and I basically got slapped back down by people who felt it was in their purview to try to A, shame me. And it's like, well, it's been over 20 years. It's not like anything you can do about it now, which sounds terrible. But what are you going to do to me now? You know, my own guilt was enough to keep me silent for so long. What is it you think you can do? But, you know, to act like, oh yeah, I talked about this, like it's nothing, feeds into that idea that people get abortions or make hard decisions and there's no repercussion, there's no emotional cause.
Yeah. But you know, for everyone who sent you horrible abuse, there'll be 100 women that read it and were really moved by it and inspired by it, but just didn't say anything. I think what you did was really brave and really important, and I'm glad you did it.
Thank you. Tariq, I don't know if you realize this, but Cicero or Khalif still has a quote from you as their pinned tweet from when you were on Spawn on Me. And it was when you talked about, it's like, I talked about leaving the Muslim faith, ethics, and abortion, and I didn't receive this much abuse as when I talked about games. And that's, you know, that's shameful that talking about games, something that should be a fun hobby and for some of us a living, got you so much, you know, fucking hassle. Yeah. So now that I've brought everything down, you know, the segue is actually into the last couple of questions before we briefly talk about the stuff we've been reading and playing. You know, we talked about other women tearing each other down and, you know, and how people go, well, you're an example or blah, blah, blah. And, you know, you have this duty, I guess, would be the best way to phrase it. What advice do you have for other women that are seeking to go into business for themselves and then kind of what's going on next other than Gadget?
So for women that want to go into business for themselves, I think absolutely do it. Don't listen to people who tell you not to do it, of which there will be many. I think everybody who's ever had a great idea has been shot down by naysayers and people who want to see you stay in your box. And people are very threatened by success. You know, they don't like to see other people succeeding because they take it as an insult to themselves and the life that they've chosen. And it's kind of sad. So you will get people who will try and tear you down, try and tear your idea down. What you have to remember is what kind of motives that person might have, you know, because it may be that the idea is not great or that it needs some work or something. But if people are telling you just not to do it, just straight up give up, you know, then there's probably a reason that they're doing that. And it's probably not because you've got a bad idea. I think it's mostly just that they want to keep you at your station. So I think it's very important to kind of analyze where feedback is coming from and what might be motivating it. And also to just believe in yourself and your idea, because you wouldn't do it if you didn't believe in it. And it is a hell of a lot of work starting a business. You know, it's absolutely, as anybody who's seen my tweets lately might have noticed, it is absolutely doing me in at the moment. Mainly because I'm trying to do it all by myself. And I think if I could give anyone any advice, I know this might not be advice everyone can take. If you can find a way to not do it by yourself, if you can find a way to have a team and have people that can help you with stuff, even if it's just taking on a little bit here and there, that massively, massively helps. Because I think it was Palmer Luckey from Oculus who said, you can't win without an army. And I think that's very true. So wherever people are willing to do it, you know, I have someone who does my ironing for me. my boyfriend does my ironing for me because he's like, well, I can't write your phone reviews and I can't pay your freelancers, but I can do your laundry. You know, that is something that I can do to take it off your hands. So definitely say yes to offers of help. And don't be afraid to ask people as well. And if you can get a mentor or you can get people in your life who've done it before, that helps enormously as well.
Yeah.
And remember to sleep, because I don't do that enough.
Well, hopefully
you don't want to burn out.
Yeah, well, once we're done, you should go get all the sleep, because I know it's getting late for both of you, actually. And then kind of what's next, or is Gadget the main thing on your plate right now?
I mean, Gadget is definitely a big thing for me at the moment. Obviously, because it's kind of my entire life at the moment. But in terms of the site, we've got some quite exciting things planned. So I'm looking at doing a couple of crowdfunding campaigns this year to make some things. I can't tell you what they are yet, but to add some stuff to the site that'll make it even better and that'll make hopefully even more of an impact for women in tech media. So I'm quite excited about that. That's good. Hopefully we're going to start doing a podcast at some point. We've been asked about this about 50 times and I'm always like, oh, but it's work. But yes, we will start doing that. We're going to do more video as well. And and so far all the videos have been me. So I want to have some videos of my other two staff as well, because they're amazing. I'm very proud of them both. And in terms of my personal life, I'm going to do a bit more kind of stuff, careersy stuff. So I want to do I want to kind of go to schools and stuff and speak. I'm going to a careers fair for children next month to talk to them about being a tech journalist. I say this is my personal life. I mean, there isn't really a boundary anymore between my personal life and my work life. I'm kind of fine with that. So that's quite exciting. I'm hopefully looking at writing some more stuff that isn't tech journalism stuff as well, so I'm hoping to do a bit more of that this year. But I have at the beginning of every year I set out 5 goals of things that I want to focus on that year, and then I don't do anything that doesn't fall under those headings, or I try not to. And so this year, obviously, heading number one is Gadget. But there's some other stuff that I'm working on. There's some cool stuff.
Yay. So we've talked quite a bit, but I do want to get to 2 of the 3 questions that our friend Tim submitted, because we actually covered the first one talking earlier. And his first question, which will be in the show notes, was talking about your Stolen interview, which we kind of went into very in depth. So Tim,
we covered that.
So Tim, by the time you get to this part of the podcast, we've covered it. but the other two questions, and Tarik, if you want to take one, feel free. Was one about Gadget, and then I'm not sure why he asked, but actually I'll take the second one, if you don't mind, Tarik, because I'm just really intrigued as to what prompted him to ask.
Oh, I know why.
Okay, I'm glad you know, because I was like, what? So, Domoku no Totoro?
Well, the reason that he's asked that is because I like both of those characters very much. So I wrote something recently about Domoku no Donuts. There's a company that makes donuts shaped like Domokon, which is super cute. And I got my picture taken with him at Hyper Japan and stuff. So I think he's adorable. But I also like Totoro. And I recently brought back from China with me a little phone charger shaped like Totoro, which is amazing. And his teeth light up to show you how charged he is. So that's super cool. But it's a very difficult question to answer. Which one? I mean, one is a phone charger, one's a donut. Those are both useful to me. I think if someone's going to hand me a phone charger or a donut, I'm probably going to take the donut. So I'm going to say Domokon.
Fair enough.
What am I looking
at? It's the question before that.
No, we didn't. What have been some of the surprising stories that you remember covering?
Yeah, I mean, well, Gadget's only existed for 7 months, so I guess it also still has to be in the last year. There have been lots of stories that have done well that I didn't necessarily expect to do well. So I think it's one of these things where if you're on Twitter a lot, you often tweet something that you think is absolute genius and you think it's going to get a million retweets and everyone's going to love it, and you tweet it and no one really replies. Like, and it's very similar. You know, you'll tweet something that you think is like a throwaway joke and then it'll do crazy well. And it's very similar in my line of work, where I'll write something that I think is like, you know, it's fine, it's okay, it's a decent piece of work, and then it will do really, really, really well. Or I'll write something that I think is fantastic and it won't do that well at all. So I think what I'm saying there is that I'm not very good at judging things, which would be fair. So some of the stuff that's done really well for us this year, a lot of the stuff related to sexism and kind of motivating women in the workplace and kind of some of the abuse and harassment that women have received. We recently ran a piece by a woman who worked at Google who'd been sexually harassed there, and she wrote about what she'd learned from being sexually harassed there. And that did incredibly well. And I think it's really refreshing to me that those pieces are doing well. Because it often is the case where, you know, I'll tweet something about sexism or about racism or about a societal issue, and a few people, the same few people, will retweet, will respond, but the majority of people don't, and they'll just leave it. And so I think it's quite, particularly the men as well, and I think it's quite refreshing to see that when we write stuff about really important issues like that, that it is actually doing well, and that people are sharing it and people are talking about it. So that has been really quite surprising for me, but a good surprise for a change. And out of the stuff I've written, probably the things that have surprised me, I mean, Stolen surprised me. I had no clue that that was going to go as big as it did. I wrote something on Bisexuality Awareness Day that I was really scared about writing, because every time I've ever talked about my sexuality, I've had a ton of abuse. And I think because I prefaced it by saying, every time I talk about my sexuality, I get a ton of abuse, people were really nice. And so that did really well, and people were really sweet, and I got good comments from that. So that was surprising in a good way as well. And I wrote something about men's nasty comments about the fact that I've had a breast reduction. again, that one did really well, but the comments were nice. So it seems to me whenever I write something about people being nasty, the responses are nice, which is kind of good, I suppose. I guess it prompts people to say the nice things they were thinking.
Very cool. So I know we've talked for a long time, but it's a great conversation. I'm really excited. But we usually wind down the episode with talking about what we've been reading / playing. And since we have related articles to what you've been reading, Holly, Trick, if you want to go first with what you've been playing, and then I'll go, and then we can kind of end on what you've been reading, because that's a conversation I'm really excited to have.
I've been doing the Division beta on PS4 for basically the whole week, and I didn't expect to like it because it's a multiplayer game, which means playing with other humans, which is ugh. But it seems to, it's gone really well, and it's a beautiful, beautiful game. I've been posting some screenshots of it. It's really stunning. And I'm waiting for next week to drop, because that's when a whole lot of really big titles happen that I've been waiting for, like Unravel and Firewatch and so on, I think sort of are starting to emerge. Reading, I'm busy with two books. I'm busy with John Stuart Mill and N.K. Jemisin's The Fifth Season, which is just brilliant. Haven't read fiction in ages, and she was exactly what I needed to get back in. It's almost like hearing your sort of anger and frustration at sort of societal issues translated into beautiful, beautiful verse fantastic.
Yes, read all of Nora's work, and you know, full disclosure, I am friends with Nora. So you know, people go, "Oh, you talk about her all the time." That's because it's because you're her friend, and I'm like, no, just go read what she's written. I became a fan first, so.
Yeah, that happens a lot, I think.
Yeah.
Where you like somebody's work, and then you kind of connect with them on Twitter or wherever, and you say, I really like your stuff, and then you become friends.
Yeah, she actually was a guest here at Think Galacticon, like 4 or 5 years ago at this point. Maybe longer. And that's when I met her, and I think that was even before the 100,000 Kingdoms had dropped, or right after. So, as for me, I've been actually playing Dragon's Dogma Dark Arisen, because I missed it from the console days. And, of course, as always, I go back to Dragon Age Inquisition.
Nice.
What was that?
Did somebody fall down?
I didn't hear anything. What happened?
I heard a very loud, like, it sounded like, like cloth being dragged or something falling over. And we can, that's what editing's for. But yeah, as always, I've been playing Dragon Age Inquisition. I haven't got tired of it entirely yet. Because I'm... After the conversation with Maxi Bytes on the episode that's out now, I've been rethinking the character Sarah. And I want to see if I can go through her storyline and actually try to befriend her and... Andraste, save me, try to romance her, because I have feelings about her romance from the clips I've seen. So... Last thing is what you've been reading, Holly, because, well, yeah, that ties very nicely into all the stuff we've been talking about.
Yeah, so because I've been harassed a lot lately, as ever, lots of people have been recommending John Ronson's book, So You've Been Publicly Shamed. And I kind of resisted reading it for a while because I thought, well, this isn't really related to what's happened to me, you know. People in this book have been shamed because they've done something. So, for example, the famous case of Justine Sacco, who tweeted something about, you know, she was going to Africa, but she wouldn't get AIDS because she was white. And so lots of people tried to tear her down and tried to destroy her career. But that was very much related to something she said that was perceived as racist. Whereas in my case, I don't think it's really the same thing. You know, I've done things that have annoyed people, but they're not things that I was really in the wrong about. You know, that joke was obviously very misguided and not really a very nice thing to say. Whereas, what am I doing? Like, I'm running a tech site for women, or I'm kind of interviewing a CEO about his app. You know, it's not really... I feel like it's not the same. So I don't think... I mean, the people that recommended it did so in good faith, and fair enough. And I am enjoying it. It's very interesting. But I don't think I've really learned anything about why people have a go at me.
Yeah, and I know, Turk, you had thoughts about his kind of turnabout, you know, like once he kind of had that turned against him and his whole, oh, now I'm being harassed and I'm being...
Well, I just actually sent you something, both of you, something now. There's a thing from the Oxford Union, a quote, John Ronson quote, "White men like me are learning how
Say
it
what?
Feels to be objectified."
What? Sorry, what? So,
yeah.
No.
Yeah. Just,
oh my God.
Yeah, the Oxford Union
That's
just.
That's not okay.
That. Ronson's book seems to be. It's one of the first sort of popular writers taking on a very topical issue that's very, very young and recent. The kind of other literature that you find on online harassment is very academic, and tends to not. It tends to not be a book, and it tends to not be written by a best-selling author like John Ronson. And you would expect... He's an excellent writer. I mean, I've been a fan of his for ages. He's very good at empathy and engaging with his topics and his subjects and so on. But here, this is just... completely the wrong person to take on this subject. So it's understandable. But because of that dynamic, his book seems to be the sort of go-to when this occurs. Like... Holly's saying that she got recommended the book. That's happened to me from complete strangers who don't know the work I do and don't know that this is the subject I write on all the time, and say, well, have you read John Ronson's book? And it's like, that's the default. That's the only way they kind of know how this has been constructed. His book has, and his positions are really dodgy, and he's not taking up stances that are sort of worth celebrating. It doesn't really facilitate much that hasn't been discussed before and by better people. And also what's happened is that he's sort of created a caricature of responses as him being now targeted and being a victim himself and so on, which is the amount of the sort of power dynamics is the major issue. He doesn't see that. He's not involved in that at all, because he is the demographic that is the most privileged. So the lack of understanding of power dynamics and how sort of shaming works and what it means for the difference between having your reputation ruined versus living every day with the sense of threats of murder and rape and so on are two vastly different things. And his topics, all his subjects and case studies all seem to be focused mostly on reputation and, you know, white people who get off okay. But a very good example is how he's handled Donglegate and Adrian Richards, who's still living with that, versus the dude who's now not even named and is moved on to get another
and
job.
That's why I was saying, Holly, I was kind of perplexed as to why anyone would recommend it, because you are being harassed for, you know, being present and being, you know, a woman on the internet and not taking anyone's shit versus someone like Justine Sacco,
yeah,
who said a really shitty thing and had consequences and, far as I'm concerned, should have been shamed for the ignorant shit that she said.
Well, yeah.
So that it's not even the same thing.
No, I do wonder how many of the people that have recommended it to me have actually read it themselves.
My guess is...
It happens a lot, though, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. People not reading? Imagine yeah. that.
But it's funny, we see it on Gadget where people will share something a lot on social media, but it doesn't always translate to traffic on the site. It's a lot of people just read the headline and retweet.
It's interesting that you said that. I don't agree that she... I actually wrote an article about the Justine Sacco incident and how she, you know, she didn't deserve to have those things happen to her. But it still doesn't... And yet still, it's used as the case study, but whereas that's not the bad thing. If you want to look at the actual people that are living every day and suffering for just existing and having an online life, you have to look at people who are also marginalized. You have to look at black people. You have to look at women of color. You have to look at particularly at trans people as well. And that's not his focus. I mean, misses the entirety of what, online harassment is about, which is a sort of winnowing yeah. of what occurs.
Yeah, I mean, it's because it's a book about shaming, isn't it? So it's a book about people shaming someone else for something they've done perceived to be wrong. But and that's why he doesn't cover normal harassment, I guess. And that's why it's not a useful thing really to recommend to people who have been harassed, because it's not the same thing. There's no, as far as I can see, there's no lessons for me here in terms of
absolutely
what I should or shouldn't be doing in terms of harassment, you know, and that it hasn't been very helpful, honestly. But it's still interesting.
Yeah, I mean, there'll be a link in the show notes, but the Learned Fangirl wrote a very interesting review of this, of the book, and Learned Fangirl's awesome. So go follow, go support her work. So with all of that, this wonderful conversation we've had, Holly, if you feel like it, tell people where they can find you online.
Please leave me alone. No, I'm just kidding.
that's my response as well. Every single time I get asked on a podcast list, that's always my response.
You can find me on Twitter. I am at Holly. So fairly easy to remember. And then my website is gadget.com. So that's gadget with T-E on the end. See what I did there?
Nice.
Oh, yeah.
And Tarik, if you really want people to leave you alone, we cannot tell people where to find you online.
It's not that hard. Just go to Reddit and all the angry nerds.
I just want to say, during the length of this podcast, I have been subscribed to another 10 email newsletters.
Oh my god, really?
Including ones, pro-life ones, because they know I don't want children, Mum's Net, various Christian ones, various Muslim ones, I have no idea. Just while we've been here having this great conversation about harassment on the internet, someone's been busy doing that.
Well, that's fucked up.
I know.
A good use of time.
Go outside.
That's a fantastic use of time.
Look at the sunset. Play with a cat. Like...
No, I have to target this harmless stranger.
I mean, I could not be more grateful this week for email verification, because none of those subscriptions are going to go through.
Wow. And, you know, this is just me giving one last thing. One thing I think is very useful, Mickey Kendall, Carnithia, gave an AlterConf talk on the gamification of harassment. And the video is up on the AlterConf YouTube, and I'll throw a link in. She is.
She's amazing.
And, you know, I've known Mickey for years prior to all of, you know, this ascent and Solidarity for White Women trending and taking off. And again, this is someone I know personally, and still seeing the extent of things that people will do with no sense of consequence, because the person who harassed her on Facebook used his name. He had no real consequence. He did not think that there was anything wrong with this. And I won't spoil her talk too much, but one part that always gratifies me when she tells the story is she used to work for the federal government. And because she worked for the government, she had to disclose when things like these happen. Nice men in suits came to visit this guy and started reading the things he wrote to her. in public on their porch, and he starts crying because he doesn't want people to hear the things that he has been saying.
Whoa.
And it's just like, you said this, you used your Facebook account, so I think that's a very good example of the person you are talking to or talking at is a human being. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not all of us have the resources. But it's an excellent talk, but it's also comes with every trigger warning because, again, I knew the extent of stuff she'd gone through, but course. Even that was, it is like, I wanted to cry and it's like, I had known her through all of this. So.
Yeah. Especially when you hear them, when they speak about, you hear their voice and you see them discuss, it really changes the dynamic. Speaking of related to this, I don't know if you saw there was an article on BuzzFeed that Rosson Warren wrote about the model that contacts the wives and mothers of men who send her dick pics.
Yes, I saw it.
I don't know if you saw it, Holly.
That's amazing. Yeah, we'll have to throw that in the show notes too. Thank you both so very much for giving up part of your Sunday. This has been a wonderful conversation. If I ever get over to London again, and you know, if I get to South Africa, I would welcome the chance to meet you both face to face.
Yes, please. Let's have cake.
Yeah, cake and tea. Because I'm too. I will happily take any excuse to have cake. and so you all know where to find me online. It's always in the show notes, and I keep running my mouth on the internet. So until next week, this has been this episode of Fresh Out of Tokens. Thank you, and have a wonderful evening.